O Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 9, text 9. Tan sametan maha bhagan upalabhya vasutama pujayam asha dharma gyo desha kala vibhagavit tan sametan maha bhagan. Tan sametan mahabhagan upalabhya vasutama upalabhya vasutama pujayam ashadharma gyo pujayam ashadharma gyo desha kala vibhagavit desha kala vibhagavit. Tan sametan mahabhagan upalabhya vasutama pujayan ashadharma gyo desha kala vibhagavit. Vaishnavis. All of them. Sametan. Assemble together. Mahabhagan, all greatly powerful. Ubalabdhya, having received. Vasu Uttama, the best among the Vasus, Bhishmadev. Pujayam Asha, welcomed. Dharmagya, one who knows religious principles. Desha, place. Kala, time. Vivagavit, one who knows the adjustment of place and time. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Bhishmadev, who was the best among the eight Vasus, received and welcomed all the great and powerful rishis who were assembled there, for he knew perfectly all the religious principles according to time and place. Purport. Expert religionists know perfectly well how to adjust religious principles in terms of time and place. All the great acharyas or religious preachers or reformers of the world executed their mission by adjustment of religious principles in terms of time and place. There are different climates and situations in different parts of the world, and if one has to discharge his duties to preach the message of the Lord, he must be expert in adjusting things in terms of the time and place. Bhishmadev was one of the great 12 great authorities in preaching this cult of devotional service, and therefore he could receive and welcome all powerful sages assembled there at his deathbed from all parts of the universe. He was certainly unable at that time to welcome and receive them physically because he was neither at his home nor in a normal healthy condition. But he was quite fit by the activities of his sound mind, and therefore he could utter sweet words with hearty expressions. All of them were well received. One can perform one's duty by physical work, by mind, and by words, and he knew well how to utilize them in the proper place, and therefore there was no difficulty for him to receive them, although physically unfit. Om Aginata Miranda Shajanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshuran Molitamiena Tasmai Sri Gudave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manopishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swai Mupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So I'd like to start by thanking the temple authorities for allowing me the opportunity to give the Srimad Bhagavatam class. I'd like to thank all the people who are listening on the internet. I'd like to particularly thank the devotees who are physically present, honoring me by their presence. I understand that it's not like you're here specifically because I'm giving the class. You know, most of you are here because you understand it's your duty to attend the Srimad Bhagavatam class. But at the same time, thank you for not deciding to not come, or deciding not to come just because I was giving the class. Thank you for being here. I appreciate it. I recognize it. I appreciate it. Thank you. And I hope I could say something worthwhile that will encourage people, the devotees who have come to the class physically and are listening on the internet, in their devotional service. That being, of course, the point of the Srimad Bhagavatam class every morning. So, without further ado. This is an amazing purport, as usual. Another amazing purport by Srila Prabhupada. And he's making this point. It's basically two points here in this purport. The first point is about how the acharya has the authority to adjust things according to time, place, and circumstance. And the second point is, Prabhupada just like shifts in midstream here, halfway through the purport, and he's talking about how the acharya is transcendental to material circumstances. You know, and he uses, of course, the example of Bhishmadev, how he's in such an adverse condition there, lying on a bed of arrows. Who could be more uncomfortable than somebody who's lying on a bed of arrows? Yet Bhishmadev, despite the fact that he was totally out of his comfort zone, was able to greet and, you know, respond properly all the great personalities who came to see him on this particular occasion. So we'll try to talk about both those two points. On the first point, about how the acharya has the authority to adjust religious principles in terms of time and place. So the first point that should be made probably is that the acharya is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Acharya mam vajaniyam yava manyeta karichit How's it go? Yep. Nav Meta Karachit. Sarva Maya Degri. Nav. Wait. Let's start from the beginning. Acharyamam Vajaniam. Yab Amanyeta Karachit. Nabuddha. Namarcha Buddha Suyeta Sarva Deva Mayogir. Yeah. So the Acharya is to be, it's in the, at least we receive it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Acharya is meant to be accepted as my very self. This is Krishna speaking. And he's never to be disrespected. That's the point that's being made there. And he's the sum total of all the demigods. So, you know, just to give an idea, the Acharya is the representative of Krishna. He has the full authority of Krishna. So he could make these types of adjustments. Some classic examples of acharyas making adjustments that we receive from Prabhupada. Sankaracharya would be an example. Sankaracharya was actually a qualitative incarnation of Lord Shiva, and he was actually instructed by, I'm not sure if it's Lord Shiva, he was instructed to do what he did. But prior to that, Buddha, who's more than just an acharya, Lord Buddha is, well, Lord, a Shaktivesh avatar. But, you know, he did the same thing. He could see, Lord Buddha was able to see that the people were using the Vedic injunctions for performing sacrifices just so they could, you know, offer animals and sacrifice and then eat the meat, you know, eat their flesh. And he realized this was cheating, and he could see this, what was going on. So he decried the Vedas. You know, Lord Buddha decried the Vedas. Now, ordinarily, if somebody decries the scriptures, what are they called? I mean, they're a heretic. But Lord Buddha is not, you know, just the opposite end of the spectrum. Lord Buddha is a Shaktivesh avatar. So in other words, he's God himself. I mean, Shaktivesh avatar. But the idea is that these great, great personalities, the Krishna's avatars and the Acharya, who is at least, you know, spiritually has the same status, same authority, they can do like this. You know, they have the full authority of Krishna. So, of course, one probably the greatest modern day example of this is, of course, our very own Srila Prabhupada, who was an acharya, and he did this on many, many occasions. And one of those occasions that I could use as an example just happened yesterday. Okay? Just yesterday. Yesterday we observed Snan Yatra, the bathing ceremony for Lord Jagannath. And we bathed Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra, and they became ill. And just for the information of those of us who are a little bit diet, it's not because they have too much sugar in their diet and their immune systems are compromised, and therefore they've, no, it's a pastime. Lord Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra get ill like this after their bathing ceremony so that to give the devotees an opportunity to render some more intimate service, you know, to focus on them even more leading into the Rath Yatra, which is another, of course, pastime. But yeah, so there's some history behind this. You know, we all attended yesterday, Snan Yatra, observed it very, you know, ceremoniously, very seriously. No, it wasn't a joking matter for any of us. You know, we were there, everybody attended, everybody made sure they were there on time, and, you know, you were there chanting in the kirtan and bathing Lord Jagannath. You know, we're taking it very, very seriously. But let's, you know, what's the background behind this whole event, okay? Well, the background goes back about 50 years ago. 50 years ago, because when the movement first began, we didn't have any deity worship. There wasn't any worship of, there wasn't any Snan Yatra. There wasn't any Lord Jagannath in the movement at that point. The story goes something like this, how Lord Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra came to be in the movement was, it happened in quite an interesting way. One could, superficially, it almost seemed like a coincidental way, but I doubt that. But anyway, the story goes like this, that in 1967, here on the West Coast, up in San Francisco, Malati Devi Dasi was Shamasundar's wife at that time, and she was just shopping one day. She wasn't even shopping. She was just browsing because she didn't even have any money on her, she says. She admits. She was in a store called Cost Plus Imports. And it was kind of like not a one level up from a thrift shop, you could say. It was just a very economical sort of a store where you could get a lot of things imported from Mexico and other countries like that very inexpensively. So she was, you know, before she had become a devotee, it was her habit to, she frequented that store and bought little things. On this particular day, she just more or less went in out of habit. She didn't have any money, okay? She was just browsing around. And then at some point, she reminded herself, well, what am I doing in here? I'm a devotee now. I don't even have any money. I'm not shopping for anything. I don't even have any money. Let me get out of here. So she just started walking out of the store. As she's walking out of the store, she saw three barrels, you know. And in those barrels were figurines. The barrels were full with figurines, little figurines about so big. Three different ones, okay? So she looked, and she looked at the three different barrels, and she picked up one figurine, which she was most attracted to. And she looked at it, and she thought, what is this little figurine? Is it looks like it's not a person, but it has a face, it has eyes. Anyway, whatever it is. So she just took it. She admits it. She just put it in her bag and she walked out. Okay. When she got home back to her apartment, she was living with Shama Sundar. They didn't have much furniture or anything like that. She was saying they used to sleep on the floor, but they did have some enclosed shelves. You know, some shelves that were kind of built into the wall. So she took it out and she put it up on the shelf, and that's where it was for a certain period of time. She doesn't remember how long. Anyway, after some time, Shama Sundar decided, he inquired about it, and she said, well, I got it in this store. And he said, well, why? He said, well, it said on the bottom, it said on the, you know, and she was, even in the store, she said, she was reflecting like this. She said, it said on the bottom of the figurine that made in India. So, she, you know, when she was in the store, she was thinking, made in India. Well, Swamiji's from India. I mean, the Mahamantra's from India, Halava, Chapatis, everything's from India, so maybe this is from India, maybe it has some significance, I'll take it. So that was the thinking. So she told that to Shama Sundar, and he said, okay. And Shama Sundar was, I listened to their, you know, kind of memories in describing this. So he was thinking, good, I'll use this as an opportunity to get, in, you know, get some association with Prabhupada. You know, I'll take it to him and show it to him, and I'll be able to kind of, you know, spent something like that. So he took it and he decided to take it and show it to Prabhupada. So one day him and Mukunda Maharaj, they went up to Prabhupada's room with the little figure and they showed it to Prabhupada and they held it out. Prabhupada, we brought this, you know, for you to have a look at. And Prabhupada, as soon as he saw it, he grabbed it out of the hands and he took it, he put it on top of his footlocker. You know, he had a metal footlocker, a little metal suitcase that he used as a desk, and among other things, okay, kept his stuff there, and that was his desk. So he put it on the top of the footlocker, and he paid obeisances. He paid obeisances. And then they were kind of like, what? They were surprised. And then when he, why is Prabhupada paying obeisances to this little figure? So when Prabhupada came up, he said, where did you get this? Shama Sundar. And Shama Sundar said, well, Malati got it. And he said, bring her. You know, so Malati was down in the kitchen cooking, and so they sent a brahmachari down to get it, and she came up there, and Prabhupada said, where did you get this? And she said, in the store, Prabhupada. And he said, was there more? And she said, oh yeah, lots more. There was, you know, he said, no, two, different. And that's how, you know, she remembers exactly how Prabhupada said it. No, two. Different. Very serious, you know. And she said, well, she thought about it for a second. She said, well, yeah, because she remembered there's three barrels, and each barrel was filled with, one barrel was filled with Jagannath, one barrel was filled with Subhadras, and the other barrel was filled with Balarams. So she said, yeah. And he said, bring them. So she went. I don't know if she stole the next two or she paid for them. But she brought them back. Oh, and before that, while there were all three of them up there, Prabhupada said, this is Jagannath. You know, this is Krishna. This is God. You know, that's how she related it. And then Prabhupada proceeded to narrate the story of how, you know, the whole pastime of Jagannath, King Indradumna, and how he commissioned the sculptor to make the deity, etc. Prabhupada told them the story. And they were kind of like, wow, you know? And so Malati came back with Jagannath, Baladeva and Subhadra, and Prabhupada then started deity worship. That was the beginning of deity worship in ISKCON. Prabhupada instructed them from this point onwards. Up till that point, when they cooked the boga, they would just, while it was still in the pot, they would say the prayers. They have a picture. There were no deities in ISKCON. She actually made the point, speak of no deities in ISKCON. We didn't even know what deities were. None of us had been to India. We didn't even know what a deity was. And, Prabhupada didn't talk about it. Maybe in a story when he told the story of Sakshi Gopal or something like that. But generally speaking, no, it just wasn't part of the culture at that point. So Prabhupada at that point told them, no, what you do is you get special plates and bowls. And whatever you cook, you put a little bit on the plates and bowls. And then you offer that, in front of these, take it and put it in front of the deities, Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra. And also at that time he asked Shama Sundar. He said, so can you make this big, And Shama Sundar was a carpenter. He never, according to Malati, he never had sculpted anything, but he said, yes, Prabhupada, I can do it. He took the opportunity. So then they went and they got this big piece of wood. I can't remember. Anyway, but he did it. He took on that job, and he made the first set of deities with an ISKCON. He sculpted them. So Prabhupada did that, and that of course was the acharya, doing something according to time, place, and circumstance, because he was introducing deity worship in the West, a part of the world which is basically iconoclastic. And in case you don't know the meaning of that word, because I wasn't clear on exactly what it was, I looked it up in the dictionary. Iconoclastic. Iconoclast. An iconoclast is I didn't write the definition down. But it's, the destruction of idols and images as icons of veneration. So, Western culture, particularly the United States, Europe, is basically iconoclastic. They consider it idol worship. Deity worship is idol worship. So that was a radical thing right there that Prabhupada was. But it goes way beyond that. And that he was, introducing that. But here's the point that, imagine this, okay, that if when Malati, if when Shama Sundar showed that little figure to Prabhupada, if instead of taking it out of his hand, putting it on the footlocker and paying his obeisances, Prabhupada just went, oh, yeah, just some figure. Don't worry, no importance like that. That would have been it. That would have been it. We wouldn't have said, they wouldn't have argued with him. No, but Prabhupada, this is Jagannath. That would have been it. No, it's the acharya, the words of the acharya are so powerful that it made the difference between, the devotees then and throughout now for the rest of the life of ISKCON, worshiping Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra, and worshiping deities. That was the beginning of deity worship in ISKCON, and just not bothering with that at all whatsoever. If Prabhupada just would have said, not important, that would have been the end of it. So just see the power of the words of the acharya. That, it's as I said, we're accepting, the same authority as you'd give to Krishna's words, basically. Based upon that Prabhupada say so, we all began in a very serious way worshipping Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra in their deity form as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, the words of the Acharya, the spiritual master, are supremely important. Different times we've heard it. Papa would make the distinction, there's Vapu and there's Vani. Vapu is the physical presence of the spiritual master, the Acharya, and Vani is the instruction of the words. Or the ideas. Ideas are expressed in words. So when we're saying words, we're saying meaning ideas, okay? And of the two, Prabhupada would always say, invariably, Prabhupada would always say, the Vani is not more important. I mean, at least on one occasion, Prabhupada actually said, Vapu is for fools, In other words, physical presence is not anywhere near as important as the words, the ideas we're receiving from the spiritual master. And the obvious proof of that is we could see that there's so many devotees who had the physical association, the Vapu association of Prabhupada, and they're no longer seriously practicing Krishna consciousness or practicing Krishna consciousness at all, unfortunately. And fortunately, on the other hand, we can see fortunately there are devotees who never had any physical or vapu association with Prabhupada, and they're practicing Krishna consciousness very seriously and doing very well and have become very advanced. So we can understand from this that the words, you know, the ideas of the spiritual master are supremely important. And elsewhere it's said that, I think by Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur, that the words of the spiritual master are the life and soul. It should be the life and soul of the devotee, of the disciple, of the follower. And so that's what, you know, that's a mentality we have to cultivate. I know myself, not necessarily in a deliberate attempt, a conscious attempt to cultivate this, but I just do it. I pray. You know, the words for me, the ideas of Prabhupada are a deity. I pray to Krishna in conjunction with Prabhupada's words. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. In the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 9, text 25, there's a very nice verse. Actually, I'll show off a little bit. I know the Sanskrit. So savadabra karuno bhagavan vivrita prema smritena nayanam buduham vrijimbam utaya vishva vijayaya chano vishadam madhya gira paranyatat purusha parana. I don't know the translation, but that's a prayer that probably to this day, I don't know if they do it in this temple, but that's, I learned that because when we woke up the deities, that was the prayer we chanted when you first, you know, you go in, you ring the bell, you turn on the light, and you say that prayer. So I used to do that at one point, so I learned that verse. But the translation is, the Lord, who is supreme and is the oldest of all, is unlimitedly merciful. I wish that he may smilingly bestow his benediction upon me by opening his lotus eyes. He can uplift the entire cosmic creation and remove our dejection by kindly speaking his directions. Very nice verse. Very meaningful verse. And the purport is really, I mean, actually I didn't know that, I knew the verse, but then I didn't realize it had such an amazing purport till recently. But the purport Prabhupada says, the Lord is ever increasingly merciful upon the fallen souls of this material world. So this is like nectar to the, you know, to the devotee's ears, at least to my ears. The Lord is ever increasingly merciful, not just merciful, not just increasingly merciful, maybe you might, you know, increase just for some time. No, ever increasingly merciful upon the fallen souls of this material world. The whole cosmic manifestation is a chance for all to improve themselves in devotional service to the Lord, and everyone is meant for that purpose. So, you know, on this point of how the words of the spiritual are worshipful, I mean, I said I'm using them to pray to Krishna. How I use this is, okay, so, you know, when you hear something, the words of the spiritual master have absolute spiritual authority. So when I read that, it's uplifting. I think to myself, okay, you know, I'm accepting, my whole life is based upon what Prabhupada's saying. So Prabhupada's saying here that the Lord is ever increasingly merciful upon the fallen souls. So I just think to myself, well, I'm a fallen soul. So there's hope. There's hope even for me, because it's here it's saying that, you know, Prabhupada's saying, which means it's true, that the Lord is ever increasingly merciful upon the fallen souls. So that means even there's hope for me. Because why? Because as fallen as I might be, Krishna is more merciful than I can be fallen. As fallen as I could be, Krishna could be more, he's ever increasingly merciful. You know, whatever amount of mercy it takes to deliver the fallen souls, Krishna can will come up with that. And then Prabhupada goes on and says, the whole cosmic manifestation is a chance for all to improve themselves in devotional service to the Lord. So, you know, I read that sentence and I think, okay, well, great. That's exactly what I want to do. But, I mean, you know, I there's all sorts of other attractions. I won't call them desires because I don't really identify with them. But there's so many other things my mind can become attracted to at one point in time or another. But really, all I really want to do, in terms of, you know, what's coming from my intelligence, is improve myself in devotional service. And Prabhupada says, and everyone is meant for that purpose. See, so, you know, when I read something like that, I just, It's encouraging. It's the life and soul. You know, that's what I'm understanding. That's my understanding of life and soul. This is my life and soul. You know, this idea, this hope, and this information that I'm receiving from Prabhupada, which I'm accepting as this is the truth, and I'm taking shelter of it, and I'm basing my life on it, and I'm praying, okay, you know, I read that and I pray, Krishna, okay, please help me improve myself. Just help me improve myself. It says here, that's what is the purpose of my life, and that's what I want to do. It says you're ever increasingly merciful to the conditioned souls, so we got a deal here, you know. No, please, you know. And I feel like, okay, there's some hope here. So that's, you know, how important the words of the spiritual master, they're the life and soul. They're the life and soul of the devotee. And now, so once again, the purport is talking about how, you know, the spiritual master, the acharya, has the authority to adjust things according to time, place, and circumstance. And so... And we could see how Prabhupada's done that in so many different in ways. Just to mention a few examples. Initially, Prabhupada asked the devotees to chant 64 rounds. And everybody knows the story, so I'm going to just cut right to the... And, you know, I think it was Mukunda Maharaj, he said, well, Prabhupada, I can't chant 64 rounds. He said, well, 32. And he said, Prabhupada, I don't think... Well, 16, but no less. Now, that was an adjustment. Because, you know, in the Gaudiya Math, they were chanting... the instruction was... 100,000, one lakh of names, approximately 64 rounds. And there was actually, I read a letter where Bhakti Siddhanta wrote to his disciples, and where he clearly stated that if one doesn't chant a lakh of rounds, he's an animal. So no, it's from, and then Lord Chaitanya wouldn't accept prasadam in the home of somebody who wasn't chanting a lakh of names. See, so in other words, Prabhupada made an adjustment for us, not a compromise. You got to understand, when the spiritual master, when the acharya says, okay, now you can do this, not a compromise. We are not, in ISKCON, we are not compromised. Prabhupada made it, there's a big difference. Compromise means he watered it down, we're really not doing what we're supposed to be doing, but, okay, no, uh-uh. No, Prabhupada is a concession, but as the acharya, as the, you know, the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Prabhupada had the authority to make that concession. And therefore, our chanting of 16 rounds in ISKCON and then doing other services like that, you know, that's as good as a member of the, you know, a follower of Bhakti Siddhanta, a member of the Gaudiya Math, like, chanting a lakh of rounds. Why? Because we receive that from the acharya, the empowered representative of Krishna. Another example is women living in the temple. Unheard of. Unheard of, right? Is it correct? It's unheard of. Prabhupada introduced that. Why? Well, I'm going to get that in a second. Fasting days. You know, in the Gaudiya Math, Bhakti Siddhanta himself, he observed Niyajal fasting on all the Vishnu Tattva appearance days, including Radharani, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, so very strict. Very strict. Prabhupada made, you know, different arrangements, different concessions, because he knew Westerners are not accustomed to these kinds of austerities. It might just blow them out. You know, I'm trying to attract people to Krishna consciousness, not scare them away. So, you know, he did those things. But and he had the authority to do it. And by following what Prabhupada gave us, we're perfectly situated. Now the question comes up, well, why? What's the motive behind doing that? The motive of the acharya for doing that, Prabhupada and other great acharyas, is just... One, to execute the mission, you know, as mentioned here in the purport, all the great acharyas or religious preachers or reformers of the world executed their mission by adjustment of religious principles in terms of... there are different climates and situations in different parts of the world, and if one has to discharge his duties to preach the message of the Lord, he must be expert in adjusting things in terms of... So he's trying to preach the message... discharge his duties to preach the message of the Lord. And so that's it, you know, sense of duty, and also compassion. Prabhupada was doing it for us. Prabhupada was doing it to help us, you know. It wasn't to make it easy for himself. He was doing it because he could see we needed that. And so Prabhupada did that, and he did it And now to tie it in with the second point in the purport about how the acharya is transcendental to the mundane considerations, the comfort zone, just like Bhishmadev, he was not in his comfort zone. He wasn't at home, he wasn't in good health, and yet he was reciprocating with all the exalted personalities that came. So in the same way, Prabhupada, he acted as the acharya, making these incredible adjustments to the principles of to the details of devotional service, maintaining the principles, right, while not for convenience, not out of his convenience, but out of compassion, out of a sense of duty, and out of compassion for those who he's coming to preach to, while simultaneously tolerating great, great physical and mental difficulty for himself. Who starts a movement after having two heart attacks? What person? Name a person, okay, who over 70 years old has two heart attacks and starts a major business or something. Nobody does that. Nobody does that. You know, if you're 70 years old and you have two heart attacks, then all your friends they'll tell you, hey, so-and-so, hey, okay, now take it easy. You know, look after your health. Look after yourself. Make sure you get plenty of sleep and watch your diet. Get some exercise, you know. Nobody would say, okay, now go someplace you've never been before. You don't know anybody. You don't know the customs. You don't have any money. You don't have nothing. And start up a spiritual movement from scratch. Nobody does that. Prabhupada did it. I mean, it's amazing just to think about that. And Prabhupada, and that was just, that wasn't even the beginning. You know, Prabhupada basically plumped to Pashya from the time he met his spiritual master and he got that instruction. Okay, you're an educated young man. Go. At that point, he made the decision, okay, I'm going to do this. And then it took him some time to get to where he had to actually physically go and do it. But, that's Prabhupada, it's amazing what Prabhupada did. He made all these adjustments for our benefit, experiencing great personal difficulty in the process of doing that. You know, towards the end of Prabhupada's life, I mean, Prabhupada knew that he was, there was different occasions when devotees, one comes to my mind in particular. Prabhupada was in New York in the what he called the skyscraper temple, and he was in the elevator, and he was scheduled to go to onto Iran, I believe it was. Anyway, the devotee, he was sick. He wasn't well. It was 1976, late 76, and devotees were encouraging Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you know what, just stay here. No need to, you just stay, relax. We got your quarters all set up upstairs and everything's nice and comfortable. So just stay here for a while and just, relax, recuperate and wait till you feel a little bit better and strong. And Prabhupada, no! He got upset. I can't remember what exactly said, but he just, it's something to the effect of, just give me the, what? Yeah. Yeah, please give me the privilege. Don't deny me the privilege of fighting on the battlefield, for Krishna like Arjuna did. The devotees just, oh, okay. They understood Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada was not, he wasn't thinking of he wasn't thinking about his body first. He was thinking about his mission, you see. And basically, he was hanging around as long as he did. He could have left, but by sheer willpower, Prabhupada stayed alive for extra months, just to give us more association, to give us more encouragement, to help us become stronger, to help, to make sure the movement would continue on like that. So that was, the amazing quality of Srila Prabhupada, who is like, the acharya personified. I mean, he made the adjustments like Bhishma, he's referring to in the verse here, and like Bhishmadev, he did... What Prabhupada did was, I think, equally as difficult as what Bhishmadev did. Bhishmadev was lying there in a bed of arrows. At the beginning of the class, I asked, what could be more difficult? What could be more uncomfortable than that? It was actually a rhetorical question when I said it at the beginning of the class, but now I'm answering my own rhetorical question. What Prabhupada did was probably was equally as difficult, if not more difficult, than even what Bhishmadev did. It was very difficult. Prabhupada was not comfortable. For months on end, everybody knows the details. I'm not going to, it's already kind of a little overtime, but it's an amazing thing. So we have a great debt to Prabhupada, of course, and Prabhupada said he wrote a letter to some devotees, they're writing a Vyas Puja homage, and they said, Prabhupada, how can we repay you as part of the, and Prabhupada, generally, it was my point that Prabhupada never replied to Vyas Puja homages, but he did this particular one. It was written by, I think, Ramaswar on behalf of the LA Temple. And Prabhupada said, if you really want to repay me, just preach very vigorously, like I'm doing. And that's the Prabhupada said, that's the way you can repay me. So I guess I had a few more things I could throw in there, but I'll stop there because it's over time. Does anybody have any questions or comments before I tell you? Yes, Hare Krishna.
Let me bring you the microphone.
Want a microphone there? Hang on, it's coming.
Thank you. Thank you for a nice class. It's nice to hear about the pastimes of Lord Jagannath. Just a quick note that Lord Buddha is not
louder,
is not a Shaktivesh avatar, but one of the 10 incarnations.
I heard avatar, one of the 10 incarnations, but...
Lord Buddha?
Yeah.
Is listed as one of the 10 incarnations, not Shaktivesh avatar.
That's controversial,
isn't
it?
Said both?
Prabhupada said both. So we don't want to get into that here, but Prabhupada said both. So we can talk about that after. So take it outside. We can take that outside. Anybody else have any question? Yeah, Neelama, Madhavacharya.
Thank you for a wonderful class, Prabhu. I think it's 16 rounds minimum. And then... So if we have an increased appetite to chant more rounds, we can increase it.
Yeah.
And then one point just kind of stuck in my head, one thing connected to is like it reminds me of Allen Ginsberg. He said, oh, Prabhupada, you're so conservative. And I don't know if he said or another devotee said to him, no, Prabhupada is super liberal, you know.
Yeah, Prabhupada responded, he almost laughed at the conservative. He said, if I told you all the rules, at least I don't know if this is the same occasion, but about deity worship, he said, if I told you all the rules and regulations about deity worship, you'd faint. You know, Papa just gave us what we could handle because he wanted to encourage us, help us like that. Okay, thank you very much. Gunjoy Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.